Hi, everybody.
Hello.
I used to have a collection. Everybody needs a hobby, right? And I had a collection of advertising and marketing pieces that incorporated Buddhism into them. And some of them were pretty hysterical. But you know how when you collect something, if there gets to be too much of it out in the universe, you have to quit collecting it because it's not valuable anymore. So I have a big file folder of it at home, but I haven't added to it for a long time. And then this week, I got a really beautifully done piece of marketing from a company called Buddha Girl, and their tagline is Mindful Glamour.
Wow.
And I was giving the talk today, so it was like a wonderful gift. I would read to you from it, but I think maybe I'll just send it around. Well, okay, just one paragraph. Mindful glamour is the morning ritual of pausing, becoming aware of your intention, then going and being it. All of our products have a story that invites you to think, to associate positively, and to look beautiful. Is that in the sutras somewhere? So anyway, that came in the mail this week. And it had the effect of completely changing my Dharma talk. These Dharma talks kind of shift on their own as you go through the week. And that one, it sort of did this complete turn. So, so I want to talk about giving and receiving and gifts. Tonight's the beginning of Rahatsu. That's our biggest retreat of the year. It's a formal sesshin. It's Buddha's enlightenment retreat. And there's a number of things that I really love about it. One is that all over the world, Buddhists are sitting together, usually for a week, to commemorate Buddha's enlightenment. And it's a wonderful retreat, particularly here, because it's usually really, it's quiet, because there's usually snow outside, and that kind of deadens any of the noise. Obviously, the windows are closed. And it's beautiful, and it's dark. It's dark in the morning when you start, it's dark in the evening when you end. And a lot of times the lake freezes over during the week of Rahatsu. And so when you're on breaks, you get to go out and you look at the lake and you see that the lake is undergoing this kind of transformation too. So it makes a really wonderful container for a retreat. And it starts tonight. For the second year in a row, I'm going to be in Atlanta leading a small group down there for a week in Rahatsu, and so the outer circumstances of the retreat are different. For example, it's going to be 66 degrees when I get there, so we won't have any snow. But it feels the same. And also, you know, when I'm down there, I feel like I'm there with my Sangha, and yet I'm here with my Sangha. And I've heard over the years from people, community members, Sangha members who weren't in Rahatsu, that as the week went by, it was really a wonderful thing for them knowing that these people were sitting here for a whole week. And it really kind of gave them a boost, you know, knowing that was going on. And knowing that people are thinking of you and supporting you while you're in Rahatsu also is sort of a wonderful gift. It's a really wonderful boost for the people who are in the retreat. So they really appreciate that that support. So there's kind of a mutuality about it. And in the meal chant, in our formal retreats and our session, there's a line that talks about that. When we first open our bowls, there's a line that goes, "May we with all beings realize the emptiness of the three wheels, giver, receiver, and gift." The emptiness of the giver, receiver, and gift. And emptiness here means complete interdependence, complete interpenetration. So there's no separation between the giver, the receiver, and the gift. There's no point that you can find at which one of them picks up and the other one leaves off. There's no place where they become different. So today I'm going to give you three examples of this. One of them is happening right now, going on this month. Another one is from 25 years ago, and the other one is, the last one, from 1,300 years ago. So, I wasn't there. I'm taking their word for it.
Maybe you were.
Maybe I was. Maybe I was laywoman Pang, do you think? So, the one that's happening now, you may have heard that Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a very famous and beloved Zen monk, written a lot of books, he's been in very delicate health for quite a while, and he's been very ill this month. And he's in his 80s, and he's hanging in there. His sangha has been sending out updates about his condition. And someone forwarded one to me this week, and it addressed the question of what can we do? Because, you know, when something like that's happening, you want to do something, and you feel sort of like there's nothing I can do. But here's what they said in their message. They said, "Let us support him by sustaining our practice throughout the day, wherever we are." And here's the part I really love. "May we let go of resentments against those who have hurt us and release our fear and sorrow by coming back to our calm and gentle breathing. This is the best way we can support him and be his beautiful continuation." And it's classic Thich Nhat Hanh. It's classic Thich Nhat Hanh. And I love their suggestion that the best thing we can do in this moment of all things is to follow his teachings. The best thing we can do for him is to do what he's been teaching all these years, to actually do it. So finding something in our words or our actions that haven't been serving us well or serving other people around us very well, and notice that it's there, and just releasing it, just letting go of it. And it's the same. It's the exact same thing as zazen. You know, we're sitting, and we're just going along, and we're breathing, and then we notice that we're off somewhere. Somehow we're off, and just noticing that, and just coming back to the breathing. So it's the same thing that they're asking us to do in our life off the cushion. So if you want to know what you can do for him this week, that's it. And then your gift to him is that, having received the gift of his teachings, that you are offering the fruits of his teachings out to all beings. So, you know, there's this wonderful, you know, there's this wonderful way in which you are the giver, the receiver, and the gift. And I love that the message that they sent out just perfectly mirrors his teaching. So the next time something happens far away and I feel like there's nothing I can do to help, I'm going to remember that. So that's the first one. The second example is one from my life that happened 25 years ago. And there was a family funeral, and it was a tragic funeral, and very difficult. And I flew out to it, and I took along my little daughter, who was just under 2 years old then. So we got there to this town, and my brother got there right after we did. And he's a Catholic priest, my older brother Tom. And that evening there was a prayer service, and the church was packed. And Tom was one of the priests who helped lead the prayer service. And so afterwards, he and I were standing around, and I had Carol and I had my little daughter on my hip. And a woman came up to Tom and said, you know, "I'm so sorry for your loss." And she introduced herself and said that she didn't know anyone in the family, but she was there because her husband worked with my cousin's husband. And then she asked him if he had a place to stay that night. And he kind of looked at me blankly, because neither of us had thought about that yet. And he said, "You know, no, but I'm here with my sister and her and my niece and little girl." And without missing a beat, she said, "Well, of course, you'd be welcome too." And so we went home. You know, usually your Midwestern reticence wouldn't let you accept that, right? Mm-hmm. But we were so, you know, sort of out of it that we just said yes. So we went home with her and her husband, and they made up beds for us. And I don't remember a whole lot about what happened, but I remember that the next morning she made us this amazing, huge breakfast. And she wouldn't let us do a thing. And at some point, you know, and at first, you know, I mean, I wanted to help. I wanted to do something. But she wouldn't let us do anything. So I sat around, and Tom and I talked to her about the family while she made us this wonderful breakfast. And at some point, we just kind of relaxed back into her hospitality. And the other thing I remember was that this was a household that didn't have any children in it, had never had kids in it, no grandkids, so there were no toys there. And but the woman collected those really fancy, beautiful dolls, the kind that you keep in a cabinet behind glass, you know? And at one point, she went and opened up the glass cabinet and got out one of these exquisite dolls and handed it to my rambunctious little 2-year-old daughter and said, "Here's something to play with." I couldn't believe it. So I don't even remember her name, this woman. But I think of her as having been one of the great blessings in my life, you know, one of the great blessings in my life. And it wasn't until a while later, when I was reflecting on it, that I realized that that we had also been a great gift to her, because she wanted to help. And I think it's a really important thing to remember, that especially when it's a time of great difficulty, you know, when somebody is sick far away or something's really hard, and somebody wants to help you, even if you don't feel like it, you should accept it, remembering that what you're actually doing is giving them a gift. What you're doing is giving them a gift. So at a time like that, once again, how do you sort out who's the giver and the receiver and the gift? When I look back on that, absolutely, she was giving us a wonderful gift, and this amazing gift. But I think that allowing her to do that for us was also a really wonderful inadvertent gift. So that's why the chant says the emptiness of the giver, receiver, and gift, because you really can't pull them apart. They're empty of any of those kind of ways to make distinctions between the people and the gift. There's no boundary that you can find between them. So that one was 25 years ago. It was a quarter of a century ago. And the last one is a Zen story from 8th century China. So it happened 1,300 years ago. And this one is about the spirit of offering. And it's a story from the Hidden Lamp, stories from 25 centuries of awakened women. And I think every Dharma talk I've given this year has had something in it from that book. And we used it in our study group this fall. And it was, I just can't recommend it enough. So, Laywoman Pang's Merit. Now, these old stories and koans very rarely include lay people, and they almost never include, when they include a woman, they almost never include her name. And so this one's unusual in that respect. So there was a family, Layman Pang and Laywoman Pang, and they had a daughter, but I've never heard her called Lay Daughter Pang. I don't know. But it was his family, the Pangs. So this one is about Laywoman Pang. One day, Laywoman Pang went into the Deer Gate Temple and made an offering of food. The temple priest asked her on whose behalf she made the offering so that he could dedicate the merit. So dedicating the merit, at that time it was a common practice to list people's offerings in a ledger, a merit ledger, with the idea that that would offset any bad karma that they may have accrued. These days, in our culture, merit usually isn't thought about that way. Something, it isn't thought about so much as something that you generate as maybe a way to describe the natural outflow of circumstances, causes and conditions that arise from a beneficial act. But he had a merit ledger, and he asked her on whose behalf she made the offering so that he could dedicate the merit. So Laywoman Pang took her comb, you know those decorative combs that you put in your hair, women put in their hair? She took her comb and stuck it in the back of her hair. Dedication of merit is complete, she said, and walked out. And that's the whole story. That's the whole story. I imagine Laywoman Pang saying this with a smile on her face. I hope she said it with a smile on her face, you know. Dedication of merit is complete. There we go. Bye. You know, in her mind, it didn't need to be written down. In her mind, whatever good that might arise from her gift of food, whatever good might arise from it, wasn't of interest to her. It was sort of none of her business. You know what I mean? Sort of none of her business. It reminds me of the people who do the flowers here. That's the gift that ends up on our altar. And we always have these beautiful flowers on the altars and around the building. And every week, we have a sort of cadre of volunteers that come in. They take turns, and every week they come and do the flowers. And when I'm here on Fridays or Saturdays, sometimes I see them in the kitchen. And the kitchen is just a sea of flowers and cuttings and things. It's really wonderful. But I see them sometimes doing the flowers. And they just seem to be enjoying what they're doing. And maybe occasionally it looks like they're stopping and sort of stepping back and going, well, now that's a pleasing display. That looks really nice. It's a pleasing arrangement. And they make the offering in that kind of spirit. And the people who come in and see the flowers, whether you even notice them or not, we participate in the offering by appreciating the flowers. We participate in that way. So there's this call and response that goes on. And if you know who did the flowers, then you tell them, oh, those are really beautiful flowers. They always sound surprised. You know? Thank you. So there's a chant that goes, may our intention equally penetrate every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. And when they're saying in the true merit of Buddha's way, that's Buddha's way is understanding that everything that we do is an offering. And if you think about everything that you do being an offering, it naturally makes you want to be sure that everything that you do is beneficial. You know, when you think about your actions as an offering, boy, you really like to think, you know, that your offering isn't something like, you know, like that. When I was a little girl, we called this offering it up for grace. Offering it up for grace. You know, anything beneficial that might come out of my actions, I want to dedicate it to all beings. All beings who are alive, all beings who are gone, all beings who are yet to be alive. And laywoman Pang's action, I think, would not have been meritorious if she had gone in and put down her, you know, her rutabagas and her pineapple or whatever the food was. Probably wasn't rutabagas. But if she had gone into the temple and put down her offering and then marched over to the priest and said, now I want you to record that it was two rutabagas this week and one pineapple. It wouldn't have been meritorious if she had done that, because she would have been doing it with a really different spirit and with a really different intention. But I think what it was an example of her lifetime of spiritual practice. You know, it just kind of shined out of her. I come from a great big Catholic family, and I have these aunts and uncles who are very deeply religious people, and you can see it, but they're, you know, they're fun too. They're fun too. But in everything, you know, in everything they do, you can see their spiritual practice kind of shining out of them. Yeah, and that's kind of what I grew up seeing, and it's something that I've always sort of hopelessly aspired to. That was the example that I had when I was a kid. So laywoman Peng actually reminds me of my grandma in that way. She's just No. She's got her rutabagas and her pineapple, and she's by the temple, and she says, I'm going to put some of these on the altar as an offering. It's just what she does. And it was such an ordinary act that when the priest said that he wanted to make sure and write it down, she just waved him away. You know, what are you talking about? She just waved him away. Knowing that, not even thinking about this, but, you know, if her offering results in a cascade of causes and conditions that make the world a better place, well, you know, hallelujah. She's Buddha woman. She's Buddha woman. So, lay woman Pang in the Deer Gate Temple. I think that's what I want to say about giving and receiving this morning. Does anybody else have anything they want to say, or a song? Don't, no, not a song. I was going to say a song. Question or comment? We could do a reading from the marketing piece, but it's too far away. My all-time favorite one was one for Dayton's warehouse sale. I don't even remember how it goes. There was something about meditation making everything groovy, downright groovy in your little world. I heard it on the radio. And I immediately got on email and sent an email to my teacher that said, when do we get to the downright groovy part?